Ready to party, we're ready. I hope you bring crazy spaghetti.
All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, September 14th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
Time to party with Doug and James and friends.
James. Doug and James and friends. This is the Doug and James and Friends NFL podcast, dude.
All right. From DFSR.com/NFL. We'll get you a free, now 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that will give you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, then $29.95 a month after that. And that $29.95 a month price tag is going to end at the start of NBA season. So if you want to get in on that low price, and that product includes NBA as well. So if you want to get in on that price, do it now.
Don't put it on your to-do list because you're just going to forget. You know, you, listener, you know that if you are like, oh yeah, I'll definitely sign back up once NBA season rolls around, you know you're going to forget. And if you're listening to this, you're doing DFS NFL anyway. So let's go. Come on.
Yeah, I personally don't have to-do lists or calendars, but if you do that kind of thing, then that would be what you want to get on. I kind of just like,
well, you do actually have a calendar. You have just like, but it's a network of people. So in the way that like I've outsourced this job of keeping track of my dates to the internet, a tool called Google Calendar, you do it the old-fashioned way, which is like it takes a village to help you keep your date straight. So
right, 100%.
You know, I help you a little bit with the FSR stuff. The writers help you with who's writing each night. Your wife helps you with, you know, what time you have family engagements, that kind of thing. And all together, you show up places on time generally. So,
and it's always like a fun, like little gambling thing. It's like always like, cause it's like, you never know what's going to happen. Like you wake up that day, not exactly knowing what's supposed to happen that day. So it's always a nice little surprise when you're like, oh, we have dinner at my aunt's house today. I'm like, I totally know we're going to that. Let me just make sure everyone's around for the cover for me, but I totally know we're going to that. All right, let's get into we're going to get into a week two game by game breakdown, taking a look at all the games going on the week two slate and trying to suss out some of the DFS implications on a week where I do kind of think, you know, we talked about this on our cash game podcast yesterday. You know, week one seemed pretty, to me, locked up in terms of where the industry was going to be moving with their plays, especially for, you know, those 50-50 cash games. Week two does not strike me to be the same, kind of looking around the industry and seeing where people are kind of landing. I have a feeling we're going to get ownership percentages all over the place. If we do skip over a couple players, I'll mention that we talked in depth about a bunch of guys yesterday in the podcast. So if we skip them over, I'll just say, hey, we talked about them yesterday. Go back and listen to that podcast. And also, always as a reminder, subscribe on iTunes and rate and review us. It helps us move up those really important iTunes charts when it comes to the podcast. We've gotten great listener growth over the last 2 years, but always looking to grow more. So rate and review it and subscribe on iTunes. And we will love you, like you, like you, something that is
like you, like more than a friend,
less than what I do with my wife, more than what I do with my neighbor. Okay. How about that?
Let's get on to the Thursday games here, Duck. I'm going to be the one who have to get us to business here. We have one of the worst Thursday games in recent memory, although Thursday tends to always be kind of a throwaway game. We got Houston at Cincinnati, two of the very worst and most disappointing teams in every respect for week one. Is this the week that breaks the trend of people playing the Thursday game to jam in players from the Thursday game?
Oh man, it's a hero effort to try to get guys in from this game. Like, you need to be fully committed to just losing money and wanting to just only have a sweat on this Thursday game. Like, last week you could make a case for it with KC in New England, right? Like, you had Brady.
Of course.
You have some guys in New England.
Kareem Hunt.
Right, you have some KC guys. Here, it's like Andy Dalton's been one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, if not the worst. The Houston team's coming off a loss to the Jags, where they were favored at home and looked horrible. They're going through a QB switch right now to Deshaun Watson. You know, judging by what we saw there, it didn't really seem like he was any better than Tom Savage. And then Cincinnati, I mean, they spread the ball all over the place on the run. I guess A.J. Green. I mean,
And they spent a lot of time between the 240-yard lines as well. Right. They just did nothing at all. I mean, yeah, so I think the running games on both sides are kind of an outright pass for me. I mean, Lamar Miller's been the same thing since he's got to Houston, which is just worth 70 yards, maybe a fumble, like the very odd touchdown if you happen to be able to. Ben Franklin catching lightning in a bottle, but that's not me. I think that if you go over to the Cincy side, AJ Green, moderately interesting for me. I mean, he's now averaged 10 targets a game over the last 11 games. He's falling cheap now because the Cincinnati offense has just been so bad at turning, you know, his still pretty decent repertoire into any scores. Like, he's still only got 4 touchdowns in those last 11 games, which is certainly down from the rate that he was scoring touchdowns at when he was kind of in his heyday. Obviously, a year older now, he's 29, maybe lost a step or two from his prime for sure. But, you know, the numbers are still pretty comparable. Like, if he's going to get 10 targets a game and average roughly 15 yards per reception, I think he's still a guy that you can consider for big tournaments. And he's ranging into the spot. You know, Houston, not a particularly great matchup, but he's ranging down into the area where I might start considering him for cash games, like, say, next week. Like, if he goes out there and has 8 catches on 12 targets for 98 yards but doesn't score a touchdown, he would be firmly in my cash game consideration for next week. But right now, he's more of just like a guy who looks pretty interesting that I'm probably not going to play in any reasonable way.
Yeah, I think he's probably the only guy you can make a case for, and otherwise this whole game has a skip feeling to it, including viewing the game. So I don't know if I'm going to be I can't even imagine watching this. At some point, you know, I want to be able to watch as many football games on a given week as possible because I think it helps. This is really pushing the limits of what you can take as a fan when you're not a fan of these teams, because I just don't think it really has any DFS implications.
Should we talk about DeAndre Hopkins a little bit? I mean, we mentioned him yesterday as a weird kind of play where he was cheap last week. He didn't really do a whole lot, but he did get 16 targets, albeit from Savage and Watson. So what do you think about Hopkins going into week 2 here?
Quarterback play is not good enough for me, I don't think.
Almost doesn't matter how many targets he gets, right? That's generally a stupid thing to say, but it hasn't mattered for Hopkins the last year and a half, so I don't know why it would start here.
I mean, he was decent. 7 for 79 is not bad. It's not when you
it's not good either,
when you ignore that he had 16 targets. I mean, Bruce Ellington's going to be out again this week. Their wide receiver core is completely decimated, basically, now that Ellington really wasn't anything to begin with, but they, you know, losing Fuller in the preseason. The other teams can just completely load up on Hopkins. Like, why even cover these other guys, to be honest with you? Like, I don't know. Like, you can divert all your resources to just covering him. He's the only guy. And they made their hand clear. They're like, we'll force the ball to him every single time, come hell or high water. I don't know. The 16 targets, I get that he led the league in targets. It's just like all targets aren't created equal, and his –
No, he had 151 targets last year and still averaged 60 yards per game. The fact of the matter is, at this point in time, DeAndre Hopkins can get 13 targets and do what the rest of the league can do with 9. And if you consider him more like a 9-target guy or a 10-target guy, maybe, then he's matchup dependent, and this matchup's not good enough. And yeah, I'm going to need more savings on Hopkins before I'm willing to go there. Thankfully for me, like, you know, it's not the main slate, it's not the million, it's not hugely high leverage. If he does something, maybe I'll keep my eye on him. But yeah, right now he's off.
And I suppose at some point Deshaun Watson improves. I mean, he has pedigree, so they brought him in here to be the quarterback. Anyway, we talked for too long about this game. Let's go on to the 1 o'clock games on Sunday. We'll start with New England and New Orleans. They go to play the Saints. The Saints are at home. New England coming off that crazy loss in Week 1 against KC, where they just got absolutely shredded by a KC team that, hey, might be improving if Alex Smith is improving and they have some more weapons here in Hunt and another year of Tyreek Hill. Maybe that ends up becoming a real offense. I'm not sure. Either way, they had one of the worst offensive game in terms of opposing yards allowed on Week 1. Now they face North.
That was the worst. Yeah, 537 yards allowed. 67 yards ahead of the second place Minnesota, and or Minnesota had that many yards in their game, and then 129 ahead of the third place. So yeah, by far the worst defense of Week 1.
So now they face a New Orleans team who also got shredded in Week 1, and that's why you see this over. I think the over under is the highest of the week at 56. Let's start with the New England side. We saw Gillislee carry some goal line carries here. Brady wasn't able to really get anything going. This is a great matchup for them again, though. This is a great matchup for them against the Saints. It feels like we should have some guys in DFS going here. It's a little hard to suss out who those guys might be.
Yeah, I don't know that you need to go there. I mean, between White and Gillislee last week, White had 43 snaps. Gillislee had only 28. So Gillislee did have the 3 touchdowns. He seems to be the definitive goal line back. He did get a lot of touches on the snaps he played. Like the fact that he played, only 24 snaps, but still managed to touch the ball 15 times shows that when he's on the field, he's probably getting the ball. There were also a lot of favorable situations for him. Like the Patriots just happened to have a lot of running downs up and close. And if that's kind of his role, he's sort of just like a short yardage back, I don't think he's really a DFS play. I suspect that he's heavily overowned for this game, just because there is a really high total here. I'm not sure it's where you need to be. Like, there's a, you know, if you're going to choose between him and Ty Montgomery, let's say, I'll take Montgomery every time. I just think people are going to really overrate the 3 touchdowns from week one, and they're going to see the 15 carries and project him for something like that. And I think the reality is a lot more like 10 or 11 carries at the most if he's going to play 24 snaps. So, because, you know, teams can't really do that, right? Like, you can't have a guy where, unless it's like an obvious short yardage situation, that plays 24 snaps and gets the ball in 67% of those, because teams can just stack the line, and it just doesn't work that way.
Well, he gets out-snapped also because the game script went completely out of his favor in the second half, right? Like, he's not going to be playing at all when they're winning, or excuse me, when they're losing. So if you
think that's bad for him. That's real bad.
It is bad for him. It's good for him. It's going to make for weeks, like sort of like we saw with LeGarrette Blount last year, weeks that are just kind of all over the place, right? Like, because the weeks that it's going to go well for him, it's going to go really well. And then the weeks that it's not going to go well for him, he's just going to be completely non-existent. Now, this does strike me as a game it could go well for because he's favored. It's not great that there are on the road. James White did outsnap him, though. Again, that was probably some more passing down stuff. Brady spread the ball.
But that's the thing, though. Like, if they want to pass, or they want to have the option to pass out of the backfield, and they don't view Gillisley in that role, like, the fact that he's just not even on the field when they're trying to catch up is terrible. Like, $6,700 on FanDuel is not cheap. You can get real RB1s from teams for that. And so getting a 2-down back that has short yardage potential, even in the game with the highest total, it's not something I'm excited about, I'll tell you that much. I can see a case for it just because the total's so absurd here and there's so many yards to pass around, but it's not something I would be pumped about.
Yeah, don't confuse. I'm not interested in playing him either. I'm just saying that, like,
you seem pretty pumped, dude. Yeah. You seem pretty excited.
I just do think the snap count could. There are going to be weeks where his snap count is going to be much higher than that. I think that probably is likely the lowest because, again, it's weird to think that these games like would go this way for the Patriots or that way for the Patriots all season long. There are going to be games where they are running downhill. Brady spread the ball around a decent amount in the game. They were playing catch up. Amendola and Cooks both had 7 targets. Gronkowski only had 6 targets and 33 total yards. They just couldn't get anything going in the air. It feels like this is a chance to bounce back. It's also a little bit hard to figure out, like, even in the passing game, who stands to see the most targets. I don't think this group has like an Edelman type that's just going to get, you know, 11, 12 targets a game. When that's the situation, are you comfortable for any of these guys for cash games?
Not really. I mean, again, there's cases to be made, and I suspect we'll see some ownership for these guys. Cooks, to me, would be interesting, but he's just so expensive. Like, I don't know why I need to pay $7,900 for a guy that just hasn't really done anything yet. Like, he had 3 catches week one, and granted, he did a lot, I guess, with the catches with 88 yards, but I don't know why I wouldn't just play Amendola on the very same team at $6,100 just because he seemed to be the possession guy, and we've seen people really thrive in that role in the past. So, yeah, but Amendola also had some snap count issues. He was only on the field for 32 plays last week to get those catches as compared to Cooks, who was out there for 67 snaps. So, yeah, there's a lot of confusion for me in the New England situation right now, and it's kind of a bummer because this is so obviously a week where there's going to be a lot of points scored probably, and the fact that we're kind of unclear as to who's going to score them for New England makes things pretty problematic.
Yeah, we did talk about Brady yesterday as a cash game consideration, so I know we kind of glossed over him here, but that was a guy we did discuss as, you know,
Brady's a great player,
right? As if there is a guy that you want to feel at least a little bit on the safe side, Brady would be that guy. So we talked about him yesterday. New Orleans side of the ball, they got trounced by the Vikings in week one. The defense looked terrible. Offense also kind of struggled to get things going. We were a little bit worried about their running back situation going into the year just because they had Ingram, they had signed Peterson, and then the Kamara coming off. Kamara actually outsnapped all of them in terms from the running back position. He had 31 snaps, but it was really just almost a complete split. Like, Kamara had 31, Ingram had 26, and Peterson had something like 18. This kind of situation just screams to me of the Saints are just going to play all three of these guys whatever Sean Payton thinks is advantageous. And I mean, we can pretty much ignore the New Orleans running back situation going forward, at least for the foreseeable future, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that New Orleans is another tricky one because they're another team. Actually, they remind me of New England right now, where the ball gets spread around so much that even though they score a lot of points, it's kind of tough to tap into exactly the guys you were on a track down. But I do think we see Michael Thomas play a huge role here. Ingram's kind of weird because he had some good receiving totals in week one, but didn't really have the touches out of the backfield that you'd prefer. Only 26 snaps again. So yeah, just a lot of weirdness in this game. For a game that's so high scoring, there's precious few guys where I would want to just lock him in my lineup and forget about it.
Yeah, I do like Thomas going into this week. We saw Tyreek Hill kind of torch the New England secondary last week. I think that he does see at least the same amount of targets he saw, a minimum of 8 targets, but I can see that trending higher in the right kind of situation for them. Remember, Minnesota does play a pretty slow game, although they did have some big strikes, but in general, they're a pretty slow team. New England plays a little bit faster in the sense that usually they just kind of score and then you get the ball back, kind of offensive plays, and yeah. They also pass a ton too, so when they're passing and the ball, these are just like, you know, pretty basic ideas, but when you a team that passes a ton, there's more incomplete passes and clock stoppages, so that just means for like more pace of play for the opposing team. New England is one of those teams. I could see Michael Thomas's targets trend up a little bit. He's a borderline cash game play for me. Fleener is close-ish in that range too. And then the rest of the team is just kind of too speculative. Even Breeze. Like, I don't think I'm willing to pay what Breeze's price are coming here for cash games, just because I just think there's better quarterback play.
Yeah, I don't know why you just don't play Brady. You know, they're in the same game. New England has the higher total. Brady, in my mind, is a little bit more reliable, even though Breeze had the better, they had similar week ones, I guess, from just an overall productivity standpoint. Just kind of a very weird situation all around.
Next game is Cleveland goes into Baltimore. Baltimore is an 8-point favorite here after just shutting out the Bengals in week one, where they just ran the ball basically every single play. They had like one long pass to Macklin and then ran the ball basically every single other play. Had two running backs that pushed up against 20 carries in the game.
Like 40 total carries, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting about that. Like, they were winning. This is another game that strikes me as could be a very run-heavy game for them because they're home favorites, and they're big favorites. They're -8 right now. Do you see yourself wanting to play either of these running backs? It doesn't look like Woodhead. I think Woodhead's out. So, Buck Allen or Terrence West. West is labeled the starter, and if Allen's going to get some of those Woodhead third-down stuff, I mean, could you see yourself playing either of these guys? Like, I'm mostly talking cash. What about tournament, though? If they're going to be such a run-heavy team this year, and that's just going to be their plan, and this could be a situation where they're able to do it again, like, do either of these guys, maybe more West than Allen, but do they have upside?
I think Allen actually has the upside just because he's so darn cheap. Like, he's, again, Terrence West, that's not a good price for what he brings to the table. $6,600 is a lot, and if you're not the definitive feature back, like, it stands to reason that there are going to be weeks where there aren't 40 carries to spread around, and if they're not, and if we're really just spreading them even Steven here, then this is just a mess. Like, you cannot pay $6,600 in a cash game for a guy who could get 12 carries. Javoris Allen, I think, is kind of interesting because he's $4,900. The fact that he got 21 carries leads me to believe that that's just kind of upside that's not usually available at $4,900. Like, if he happened to, like, if you're going to carry the ball 21 times, you just have a chance to score, right? It almost doesn't matter where you're getting the carries from. And at $4,900, that presents a level of upside that I'm kind of interested in, especially if Terrence West continues to struggle just in terms of an overall kind of yards per carry basis. 19 attempts for 80 yards isn't anything to write home about. But yeah, by and large, both these guys, I think, for me personally, are stayaways. I don't really see any reason to go there. Neither of them had particularly inspiring fantasy performances in spite of there being 40 total carries to spread around. So you'd figure that would be something like the ideal situation. And in any game where things are a little bit closer, I just don't see it.
Yeah, no, this game is pretty much a skip. I think you can play the Ravens defense against them. So it's just as a big favorite for...
Yeah, I think you can play both defenses in that Thursday game too. I forgot to mention that.
Let me move on from this game. There's a couple like just relative skip games this week. Yeah, no, it is good.
Several games over 40 total, which is just nuts. I mean, a 39 here, 38 in the Houston-Cincinnati game. Those are just totals where I'm just a passer on that. I just can't imagine wanting to target games like that.
KC takes on Philadelphia in Kansas City. Philly coming off the week one win against the Redskins. KC obviously coming off that huge win against the Patriots. We can start here with, I think, the Chiefs side of the ball. They had, Ware goes down to start the season. They slot in Kareem Hunt as their every down back. He looked every part of the role in the first game against the Patriots. Do you see people using that game as a good proxy for like what they plan to do for the rest of the year, and then making him a play that could be played in cash games here. You know, Casey checks the box of home favorite for running back. That's what you want, -5.5. And they've shown that they're going to give Hunt the ball. Do you see him as being in that kind of discussion for cash games?
I think you got to talk about him. I mean, New England, they embarrassed New England in week one, but people forget the Patriots were an excellent run defense last year. They allowed fewer than 4 yards per attempt, which was a top 10 total in the league. They allowed the third fewest overall rushing yards. I mean, a lot of that was game script dependent. They didn't exactly have a ton of rushing attempts on them, but yeah, New England was a really tough matchup for opposing running backs. The personnel, obviously there's some minor changes there, but are by and large the same, and Hunt was great. And so you move from New England and bring up against a Philly team who was kind of more middle of the road against the run, and I think a lot of people are going to be interested here. I think I am pretty interested. I'm not ready to call him the heir apparent to David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell in terms of the top overall running backs, in spite of a particularly inspiring week one. But yeah, definitely curious to see what he does against Philly and expect to have him, or expect to see him with some significant ownership here.
Worth noting on Hunt that he played only 40 snaps in this game. And Kendrick West played 24 snaps. Now, they were winning by a lot at the end and some of those other things, and West was in there for mostly for passing downs, though Hunt was targeted. He did have 5 targets.
He had 5 catches, you know, 22 touches, even in 40 snaps. It's not as much of a red flag as it might be normally.
His yards per attempt, basically, are numbers you're never going to see. Like, he averaged like 8.5 yards per carry and, I don't know, something like 20 yards per catch. The yards are just not going to be replicated with this kind of volume. So I would just caution people on that. Like, it's fun to look at these numbers, these kind of video game numbers at the end of the day, and say, oh my God, this guy was just like absolutely unbelievable. 230 or 240 yards of overall offense. He just couldn't have been better from what happened for him every time he touched the ball. So I would throw a little caution in there. I think we have him as our like 6th or 7th highest rated running back on the week, ahead of some other guys, definitely ahead of some other name guys, but I don't think I'm going to go overboard in playing him, even in a pretty good matchup. What about anything in the passing game here? Tyreek Hill had a couple big plays. Alex Smith looked a lot better than people expected him to. Any of these guys interest you at all?
It's hard to imagine playing Alex Smith, but Tyreek Hill is interesting. I mean, he's at 7,200 now, again, moving into a better matchup against Philadelphia. He had 50 snaps, which is pretty decent, and a 16% target share. And, you know, that kind of, you know, those kind of looks in a game where Kansas City was ahead and had every incentive to run are pretty encouraging for me. You know, right now he's being listed as questionable. I don't think anyone really thinks that he's going to miss this game. I don't think people will believe right now that his injury is going to play into his productivity at all. So, yeah, I think Tyreek Hill, definitely a guy that should be on your radar, at least for big tournaments. He might even be over-owned there would be my guess, but certainly the upside is there. And we saw what the guy can do last year, too. I mean, he can really run when given the reins on that wide receiver one role, and I think he's making the most of it.
No, for sure. I don't think he... You know, they clearly want to get him into the offense, but... I'm just not sure they're going to do it. I'm just not sure they're going to pass enough over the course of a game. I don't have like a good sense of what the Chiefs' overall offensive game plan. I know they were really good in week one. It's really also a complete outlier game too, which I don't want to take too much from, just because we have had a pretty long track record of Alex Smith and some of these other guys in the NFL. So I don't want to go overboard on them, but I do like them from for sure from a tournament perspective. Eagles side of the ball, we really liked Alshon Jeffery going into week one, even with Josh Norman supposedly shadowing him for the entire game, which I think he did most of it. I don't think he did the entire game, but most of the game he was on Jeffery. Our system's still pretty high on Jeffery going in here in terms of his target share and what we think the Eagles are going to do going forward. How much does his week one, knowing, you know, the contextual pieces about how the Redskins plan to play him on defense and did play him on defense, how much does that affect where we stand with Jeffery now going forward in terms of his targets?
I mean, he kind of remains an unknown for me. I think we always see this when wide receivers switch teams. Obviously, he had a very tough matchup week one. We talked about this on the podcast leading into week one, but Norman wasn't a top one cornerback the way he has been in the past last year. He's more like a top 10 guy. That's still really good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's obviously like the top third of the league. But the thing with a guy like Jeffery is I think in my mind anyway, I'm hoping for a little bit more than 3 catches on 7 targets, even in a pretty tough matchup. And I think there at least have to be some red flags for Jeffery right now. Switching teams for wide receivers is always hard. It's hard to learn a new playbook, get on the same page as a new quarterback. You know, Wentz does have guys that he's comfortable with already, and Aguilar and Ertz. And I could see a situation where Jeffery is just kind of like around for the first several weeks of the season. I think the real question on Jeffery that people are going to have to answer for themselves is, do you want to try to be a week early? Are you worried about being a week late, because you can spend 5 weeks being a week early. Whereas if Jeffrey really turns it on and just kind of goes off and has, you know, 12 targets for 9 catches on 130 yards and a touch or two, then you're going to feel pissed when you have to pay $7,800 for him next week. But right now, I'm really, that's one of the very biggest questions for me for cash games, because I think if you, I can see a scenario where we're going to pay 15% more or more for Jeffrey later in the season. But right now, I'm a little bit gun shy just because we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, $5,700 on DraftKings, I think I'm willing to buy on that price. Just because I do think he represents a guy that we could see in that 7,000 range if he's able to avoid injury, basically, because that's been...
How about on FanDuel? I mean, he's $6,900 on FanDuel. That's very affordable for a guy with his pedigree.
Yeah, no, it's close. I think that with some of these guys where I don't think my assumptions of him and his role and maybe just like or the roles of or excuse me, the assumptions that a lot of people kind of placed on him going into the season is really pretty much unchanged going forward, or excuse me, going into this week than it was last week. We did see them try to get him the ball even in like just spots where he was clearly not open. We saw some red zone targets. He just had a couple drops. And so I think I'm just kind of fine with him. Again, the 69, I'm more comfortable with the 57 on DraftKings than I am with the 69 on FanDuel, I think. And I think that I could see myself running him out there in cash games again and just willing to say I want to be a week early on him. So I don't feel great about it. I didn't feel great about it going into week one either because I knew the Norman matchup. But I'm relatively unchanged on my thoughts on Jeffrey. What about guys?
Jeffrey has one great season in 2013, and that was a long time ago, and there's a lot of time between then and now. I think a lot of people hold on to the big totals that he put up, and especially when he was flashy downfield receiver and always the potential and the promise, and, you know, he was picked high in season-long leagues. I just don't know that we have any real reason to believe that he's going to return to being that level of good. Now, he doesn't need to be at 5,700. I get that much for sure, but... You know, even if he goes back to last season, 52 receptions and 94 targets in 12 games for 800 yards and 2 touchdowns, that's not very good. So I have my eyebrow raised on Jeffrey. I'm just not sure that he's going to turn into anything special.
He and Aguilar both got the same target share in week one, 8 targets each. Do you think that, right now we have them somewhere around 9 for Jeffrey and 6 for Aguilar. Do you think we should be closer, to 8 and 8? On them going forward, or does Jeffrey deserve to have more targets in our system?
I think 8 sounds right for Jeffrey. Last year in Chicago, he had fewer than 8 targets per game. He's had higher totals than that in the past, but I'm willing to go off of one game and 12 games last year. And understanding that I could be wrong and that number could be low, but in a game, I don't know, like in a league where we have every single team playing once again, and we have even more games on the main slate this week because there aren't 2 Monday games, I just don't know why he needs to be one of my top 3 receivers unless the price is just out of this world, because it's total speculation. Like, it's actually just betting on his name. There's no production reason why we should think Jeffrey is going to be anything new other than what coaches say and stuff. And I just don't think that's where I want to put all my eggs.
It makes sense. Ertz also had 8 targets, was a huge play last week. Could see him as a play this week as well, though the price has come up a little bit and the matchup is just not as good, and there are some other tight ends in good spots here. Moving on, we have Tampa Bay playing for the first time after sitting out week one because of the hurricane. They come in as a big favorite. Well, I say big, -7 against the Bears. Bears coming off a game. Man, they could have won that game. 3 shots at the end zone, or maybe 4 shots at the end zone to end that game. Howard drops the one. Miller drops one. Was kind of held on that play a little bit. But they really were a pass away from beating the Falcons. But let's start with the Tampa Bay side. So we're walking into them sort of like this is week one because they just kind of sat out the first week. They're favorites here. Doug Martin is going to sit. Jacquizz Rodgers is going to get the start. In starts last year, they showed a willingness to give him the ball a lot. He had a pretty big volume in games that Martin sat out. He's coming pretty cheap. Do you see Rodgers as a guy that we could like theoretically play in cash games here? He's coming pretty cheap across the industry, and we've seen 20-plus touch games out of him in the past when he's been given the lead back role.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Chicago, a bad rushing defense last year. Again, too early to really draw any huge conclusions about what they're going to be going forward. Atlanta looked pretty good running the ball against them. That was just kind of a weird game. To your point, they did have a chance to win it. I don't think Charles Sims represents too serious a threat. I think if they were going to go in that direction, they would have by now. So, yeah, I think Rodgers at 6,600, he does actually fall into that range. I mean, if you've been listening carefully to the prices so far, you'll hear that like every game has some running back at 6,600, but Rodgers is sort of the head of that class, or among the head of the class for me in that range, just because I do think he's at least a definitive number one back.
Yeah, that's kind of a theme about what cheap running back we're going to be willing to play. I don't mind him. Our system doesn't really like him that much, all things considered. He's pretty low, even though we have him for a fair amount of volume and targets just in that offense. Other guys on the Tampa Bay side, Mike Evans has shown himself to be a big target guy in the past. Are we a little worried? We saw from week one, the kind of the theme, we think, from week one was no preseason, rust, sort of teams looking completely out of sync. Do you think that factors in at all when we talk about Tampa Bay here?
Probably. I mean, it's not like they're super polished with Winston and Evans in the first place. Like, these guys sometimes have difficulty hooking up in any sort of consistent way. I think there are rust concerns. You can't consider Evans for cash games from where I'm sitting, but he's always a consideration for me for big tournaments. Like, he's kind of the exact mold of a guy you want for big tournaments, in that you have to pay for him, but what you're paying for is the top of the top upside in a week where everyone struggled to put up big totals week one. Tampa Bay could just be a team that comes out and puts some big digits on folks. So I do think Evans is in consideration for big tournaments, but just not for cash games whatsoever.
Chicago, obviously the big story was Tarik Cohen comes out and just wins someone, helps win someone $1 million last week because he came out of nowhere and had a huge game. He was out-snapped by Jordan Howard, though not like in some crazy kind of way. He played a lot more than I think anyone ever expected him to, and they did seem to force feed him the ball whenever he was on the field. Like, his targets were out of control. They're going to be down another wide receiver now with Kevin White. Cohen did line up some in the wide receiver slot in week one. Do you like him at all, or do you see him as just sort of like that new shiny toy kind of thing that everyone kind of is on, but it just ends up being a flash in the pan that, you know, we get some more Jordan Howard here, and that it was, I mean, Cohen was just kind of like a one-hit wonder. Which do you see him more as? Like a guy that is consistently going to get this kind of targets, or just kind of had a great week one and everyone's going to overbuy on him?
He's a one-hit wonder. I mean, he was on the field for 28 plays and got, you know, either a touch or a target in over than half of them. That's just not realistic in my mind. Everything was going right for him, and so the Bears had every incentive to keep giving him the ball. He seems like the classic kind of guy where as soon as things aren't going that right, you just see a lot more Jordan Howard. You know, Howard is a big name coming into this season. They're paying him a decent amount of money, and having Cohen out there, sure, it's nice to have that piece that you can kind of give the ball to, who can go off occasionally, but you can't pay real prices for a guy like this until he is just on the field for more than half of the snaps, in my mind. Now, that could happen. Like, they could just see that he's this great kind of two-way threat where he can run or, you know, catch balls or whatever, and they just put him out there for more plays. But right now, it's not a guy I'm really considering at all.
Moving into Tennessee and Jacksonville, it's funny what 1 week will do for in terms of Vegas, because Jacksonville was a huge underdog last week on the road against Houston as well. They probably should have been, knowing what we knew about them. They pull off the win, and now they take on Tennessee at home. Tennessee's only a -2 favorite. There's no way this has been a week one game, this line would have looked a lot different than it does right now. That being said, 1 week can kind of change your mind about some teams. Jacksonville may be one of them, though I'm not totally sure. Leonard Fournette had a huge game. He's a highly touted rookie, obviously, a high round draft pick, great college player. Looked pretty good, all things considered, and Jacksonville did seem like they were willing to just kind of lean on him. How do you see Fournette going into this game against Tennessee? Do you think people will end up wanting to buy on him because of that week one performance, and are you either with him or against him?
Yeah, people will buy on him for sure. I think that as far as whether I'm with them or against them, I guess it just depends on their goals. I think you're sort of overpaying based on the upside for cash games. I think there is more upside for him than, you know, some of the more boring middle of the road guys like Jacquizz Rodgers or whoever, for sure. Just because we saw such a healthy amount of touches week one. I mean, 29 touches is out of sight.
Right.
Now, granted, Jacksonville had every opportunity to give him the ball because they found themselves in the unlikely position where they were up by a lot of points. They allowed the fewest total yards. They just crushed him in time of possession. They, again, wanted the game to end quickly, so he touched the ball a lot. It's very unusual for rookie running backs to touch the ball 30 times per game, so I'll point that out. And I will also say that the actual kind of aggregate totals, like 100 yards on 26 carries, isn't that much. Three receptions for 24 yards isn't really anything to write home about. And so what you're looking at in Fournette, the 100 yards is flashy, but you're really going to need a lot of touches to sustain this level of production. Granted, you know, Houston, pretty reasonable defense. They didn't really have a reputation as being a sieve. You know, Tennessee last season was a worse defense than Houston in most respects. Tennessee's sort of middle of the road week one. Who knows what to make of that? But I think my general sense is that Fournette will be overowned for cash games. And we're just going to have to continue to wait and see if Jacksonville can sustain that level of production out of the running back position, given their other offensive woes.
And we did talk about Hearns and Lee yesterday as possible cash game plays with Allen Robinson out, though Allen Robinson really barely played in week one. They didn't have to throw that much, and both those guys only saw four targets each. It strikes me this is a game where they could be playing from behind more, so they'll have to throw more. That doesn't always mean anything because it's Blake Bortles. But I do think those guys are coming cheap enough that you can consider them in cash. Tennessee side, they took on the Raiders in week one. How do you see, and you know, what kind of stands out to you from the Tennessee side of the ball? Mariota had a decent game, ran in a touchdown, I believe, and you know, he was kind of spread the ball out between the three receivers and Decker, Matthews, and Davis. So Davis had the biggest game but had the fewest amount of snaps. Anyone on the Tennessee side you kind of like here?
Well, Mariota, I think, just continues to make a case as one of the best naked quarterback plays in the NFL. You know, he can do it with his legs. You know, both the running totals and the potential for rushing touchdowns make him a really interesting guy to stack along more expensive skill position players elsewhere. Also because he's pretty inexpensive and has as much upside as anyone just based on the running opportunities. I am a little bit concerned about the Tennessee passing game here. You know, Eric Decker, you know, frankly, reminds me of Alshon Jeffrey, a guy who's had a lot of success elsewhere, who's kind of not been crushing it recently, who wasn't very good in week one. Yes, he's very cheap, and if you want to kind of paste his old stats on his current price, you're going to be feeling pretty good about yourself. But Mariota doesn't really have a great track record of hooking up with possession receivers in any sort of meaningful way, so I don't know that Decker's a guy I'm going to really think about. Rishard Matthews, I think, is a curious case for me because we continue to look at him and kind of project him for exactly what he did last week, which was five receptions for 71 yards. I think that's reasonable on DraftKings, 6,300 on FanDuel. Not probably where I want to land for cash game purposes. I do think the floor is pretty low on Matthews. I don't know that the ceiling is especially high. And even if the middle road is something reasonable, again, if I only have to choose between three guys, I just don't know that he would be the guy I would choose there.
Minnesota goes into Pittsburgh to take on a Steelers team that really struggled to pull off the win against the Browns last week after coming in as pretty heavy favorites. Le'Veon Bell was the story where he just stunk. There's no other way around that he stunk, and they barely gave him the ball, and he was a massive disappointment. How much does that change our thoughts about him going in to week two here? We haven't projected for the highest. We still haven't projected as the highest overall raw points running back, though it's not as clear cut as it was going into last week, where he basically had on paper a dream matchup against the Browns. The Vikings are not that kind of matchup. Pittsburgh's still a favorite at home, so you like to see that for him. It's really hard to imagine they give him the ball less than they gave him in week one. But he would need to see significant. I mean, basically 100% increase on his usage totals from week one to week two. How do we feel about him going in? Do you feel like he's going to be a guy that we are going to are overreacting to in terms of maybe not playing him again in cash where the price hasn't moved?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the industry memes around Bell are that people are going to overreact. And I'm sure if you go listen to, you know, an ESPN podcast about fantasy football, they're going to say, go find that Le'Veon Bell owner and trade with him because you can get a great value on one of the best backs in the league. And I think that by and large, that's probably accurate. The problem, though, is that we're dealing with a much more granular game than season-long fantasy, which is to say, Bell could score the most fantasy points among running backs for the rest of the season and still be a bad DFS play every week, right? Because this pesky thing with the salary, right? And so you're paying a lot for Bell right now. You're getting him in a game where the Steelers are projected to score three fewer implied points than they were projected to going into last week. The Browns are a team that Bell has crushed in the past. He hasn't had, you know, any sort of similar track record against Minnesota, and the Steelers just didn't try to lean on him the way they have in the past. And so all this to say, will Bell be still, you know, worthy of a top round pick in season long fantasy leagues? For sure. Will he continue to be a $9,200 running back on FanDuel? That one I'm pretty That's the thing I'm still sitting with. So I guess this early in the week, I mean, it's up to Thursday now. I still haven't really settled on where I want to be with Bell, but I'm leaning away from wanting to jam him into cash games. Just the combination of, you know, lower opportunity, week one, much more difficult matchup against Minnesota, and just feeling that little uneasy, you know, spidey sense that you get after doing this for a while of, you know, sometimes roles do change. And maybe we're not there, but I'm at least feeling that feeling a little bit.
Football, the problem we have with football as opposed to like something like basketball or baseball is that there's just almost, sometimes I think there's just too much time to dissect these things, right? Like if they had played again on Monday, right? Like if football was a game where they just played the same game on Monday, I'm not sure our thoughts would have been like, I wonder if we would just wouldn't have had enough time to like really sit and stew on whether or not we should like lower his projected totals or not. And sometimes I wonder if we should just take that approach and say like, look, where would we have been on Monday if we just kind of just played him? In that sense, if that was the case, he'd be a clear cash game play, right? Like I think we have gone relatively unchanged exactly. about him. It's the fact, I just wonder how much time, I wonder if the time is sometimes your own, is an enemy as much as it's a blessing in terms of football. Does that make sense? Like, and I wonder if that's the case here with Bell.
Yeah, that's a great call. I mean, certainly if this was LeBron James and it was the first the first game of the season, we wouldn't even consider it a statistically relevant game. The issue with football that's very different from baseball or basketball, well, basketball actually has an analog here. This would be the equivalent of, say, LeBron James coming out and playing 24 minutes in a close game, right? The way opportunity is separated in basketball is you're on the court and then there's usage, right? And so, you know, how often you get to shoot relative to your teammates when you're all on the floor together. That is dictated by the players. But then there's a much more fixed opportunity, which is how often the coach elects to put you in the game. And that's what we have in football as well. Like, it's not a judgment call in most cases for running backs how often they get to carry the ball, right? It's the coach says, hand the ball to Le'Veon, or he says, don't, right? So sometimes in the passing game, that's not true. You know, Roethlisberger can kind of throw down to Bell when he doesn't see anything else downfield. But there is a real concern when the coach says, give that man the ball 10 times to rush in a game where we're up the exact amount where you would want to keep rushing your feature back. That's why it's different for me than a one-game sample in something like basketball. Where it would be similar to if a star player did play fewer minutes. You know, that I think is a closer analogy than just a bad performance overall.
Yeah, fair enough. Bell only played 72% of the snaps. Now, again, this was his first game back and he had no training camp, right? So, like, if we feel like those things are going to increase, I think there's a lot to like about him.
I like Bell. I'm just saying that this is more relevant than it seems to be. But by the people who are just like, yeah, it's one game sample. It's more than that to me.
Other notable performances for them, obviously Antonio Brown was the wide receiver player of the week. He converted all 11 of his targets for 182 yards. He was the man. You know, we've known this about him for some time now, where he is just a target monster when they find matchups. Now, you can't really expect the 100% conversion rate on him, and 11 targets is good. It's not like completely out of the world fantastic. It's a very, very good performance by him in terms of target share. Do you see him as cash game viable again? That price has climbed a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's expensive, but if you're going to pay up somewhere and you're paying up for safety, I think Brown is a great place to start. You know, we've seen this kind of go back and forth between wide receivers and running back, big name ones, but given the fact that he was so involved in the offense in a game where they were leading, very encouraging sign. I mean, he's always been great when paired with Ben Roethlisberger, so yeah, I think Brown is totally in play here.
On the other side of the ball, Minnesota obviously coming off a huge week. Sam Bradford looked amazing just in terms of accuracy,
yeah,
and
sure
just
did.
Finding some of those receivers. Thielen and Diggs both had big games. Cook too. How do you see? Do you see this? This Vikings offense is like sort of taking a leap here. Now, they had a great matchup. New Orleans Saints defense is awful. That game was on turf. But, you know, all things considered, they have another year of just the quarterback and wide receivers being able to hook up, and those guys stay relatively healthy over the course of the season last year, and they now have what appears to be a real running game, which is the thing they really lacked last season with Cook. Now, how much does that kind of change how you feel about the Minnesota offense going forward? Like, does the addition of Cook and some of that running game maybe boost them across the board? Like, does that help them in all phases, you think?
I think so. I also think Sam Bradford's play is going to be, I call him Bradford or something weird, some weird word. Sam Bradford plays is going to be really what drives this offense. We saw incredible conversion rates between both Thielen and Diggs. You know, Thielen going into this week, just 5,800. He outsnapped Diggs by 7, had a better target percentage as well. 9 receptions week 1, 157 yards. I think he's going to be a super popular cash game play this week, and for good reason. I mean, I think actually there's a lot to be excited about there. Thielen, really good athlete, you know, excellent both downfield and in the possession game. So I think we could see him kind of supplant Diggs. You know, it looked for a while like Diggs would be the consensus number one receiver in Minnesota. And right now, I think they have sort of a 1 and 1A situation, except you only need to pay $5,800 for Thielen. So very excited there. As far as Cook is concerned, I think Cook is a great play in all formats as well. I think he's cheap. I think there's significant upside there. I think that, you know, we've seen a lot of history in Minnesota of them just picking him back and running him, whether it was Peterson or any of Peterson's subs when Peterson was hurt, like Matt Asiata or whoever. So, yeah, I think them drafting Cook that highly, deploying him the way they did week one, an excellent sign that he'll be in the Kareem Hunt price range, you know, somewhere between 75 to 7,800 in the future. And I think we're still getting him for a bargain right now.
Yeah, the only thing you don't like, obviously, is, again, that they're underdogs, and that's usually not a great sign. You know, just when you look at this kind of stuff on a week-to-week basis, you want your running backs to be favored going into games. Now, look, this is not a blanket statement. Can running backs that aren't favored have good games? Yeah, sure, it happens. Like Leonard Fournette. I do not like when people would like pick out the single examples of why things, when things happen, as to why it might not be or why it would be a good play. I'm just saying, on the whole, these are situations where we see favored at home running backs tend to just outperform the guys in the similar situations as on the road on the road and underdog. So that's be the only thing that I would throw out there in terms of Cook. Next game does have some DFS intrigue here. Arizona heading into Indianapolis to take on the Colts. Colts probably the worst. They definitely are the worst team in the league, I would say. coming after a game where they get completely smoked by the Rams in all phases of the game. Rams, except for Todd Gurley, everyone else on the Rams was able to kind of just smoke them. And without luck, they're just looking like they're just headed probably for the absolute basement, dead last.
Yeah.
Now, so I'm just going to skip them completely. I don't think there's any DFS intrigue there at all. But Arizona, it says a lot about Indy when Arizona loses probably the best overall player in the NFL, non-quarterback version, and are still 7.5 favorites going in here. The Cardinals are going to be playing without David Johnson. They've announced Kerwin Williams as the starter with Andre Ellington as going to be the third down back, and I think they have Chris Johnson on the roster as well. We've been down this road many times with running back one gets hurt, backup comes in and is named a starter, and there's been some kind of idea given about what that guy's role is going to be. And man, yeah, I feel like it's worked out less than it has worked out. Like there's just too many. Yeah. That's just my overall feeling. I'm willing to be wrong about that. But this strikes me as one of those situations where they've named him the starter. They have two other guys who are equal pieces, old or bad or whatever. But none of these guys are David Johnson. Where do we stand with Kerwin Williams right now in terms of how we would feel about how safe of a play he is going into this matchup?
I don't think I want to play a two-down back on FanDuel for 6,100. That seems borderline insane to me. You know, maybe he'll wind up being more than this, and we can kind of learn that going forward. I think you could still get the same price next week, and it's not like, to your point, that Todd Gurley ran all over Indy either, so I don't really
know. That could be a Gurley problem. Gurley might just stink too, so I'm not...
It could, absolutely, but I'm just saying Gurley is at least the bigger name there with, you know, a running game that has been effective in the past, especially when it's had a lead, and, you know, just worth noting, I guess, is my point. On DraftKings, it's a little bit more interesting, though. Kerwin Williams, just 4,800 there. Obviously, you can flex into that spot, and spending 4,800 for a 2.5 down back or whatever, a little bit more interesting. Do you have any interest in Kerwin Williams on DraftKings at 4,800? Because right now, with our assumptions in place, he is showing up in lineups.
He's showing up at 100% of lineups, and it's not like we have him for some crazy amount of carries. It's with the running back comps we use. We really weren't able to use his career numbers as comps because like he just had totally outlandish yards per carries and stuff like that. So we were using sort of more of a baseline on him. But yeah, it's not like we've given him a ton of run here. He's getting a great matchup. Like this is the reason the system loved the Colts last week. Excuse me, loved Gurley against the Colts. Now he didn't perform. The Colts are bad in all phases of the ball. They stink on defense, right? And they are awful on defense. They cannot stop the run at all. That is a great spot to be in for a team, for a guy who all of a sudden could touch the ball I mean, if you knew he was going to touch the ball 15 times, would he be like an auto start for you? I think, right.
And on DraftKings for sure, not on FanDuel.
And I think that's kind of where we are with him, right? Like, it's close now, and he has been featured a little bit in the passing game as well, so that's encouraging. Even if he's not going to play those third downs, I also just like don't trust. Here's my other problem. I don't trust coaches. Like, I just don't trust when coaches say things. This is actually my bigger issue with this problem. It's not really a Kerwin Williams problem, and it's not like his matchup problem or anything like that. It's that I simply don't trust coaches when they say they're going to do something going into a week, because one, there's absolutely no incentive for them to tell the truth, because they're not mm-hmm. no one holds their feet to the fire. Like, the other team is going to be like, the Colts aren't going to come in, and Chuck Pagano's not going to be like, dudes, you said
Kerwin. It's like my kids yelling at each other being like, hey, that's not fair, you said you're not keeping your agreements.
Exactly. Yeah, like that. Chuck Pagano's not going to, you know, target Bruce Arians at the end of the game and be like, dude, you said Kerwin Williams and then you ran Andre Ellington like a lot more, like what's up with that? Like, I don't know.
100%.
And this is my bigger problem. And this is the thing that always causes me trepidation with these kind of situations, because this is the thing we've seen time and time and time again. Oh, Charkandrick West is going to get all the carries. Oop, no, Miles Davis got some too, you know? Like, and these kind of things, or whatever the Green Bay running situation was last year, or Thomas Rawls this year. I mean, or last year. There's like, the list is like seemingly endless of the times where a coach has come out and said something, everyone kind of fell in love with it, and went overboard, and then just a totally different thing happened. I mean, how much does that factor in here? Because that's actually my bigger worry.
Yeah, I think that's a totally reasonable worry. I mean, there's so many, again, it boils down to this in football, is that we have so many different guys to choose from, and there are so many situations that are relatively known, and anytime you take on an unknown, you're taking a significant risk. Now, sometimes that risk is mitigated by the fact that some other huge, large percentage of people are right there taking the risk with you, and sometimes it really works out, and sometimes it doesn't, but it doesn't hurt you, and so it's complicated. But I think all the lists that you, or the risks that you laid out there, are totally appropriate, and it's gonna, I think that Williams will, for instance, show some ownership on FanDuel, and that's where we'll get away from it. I do think that on DraftKings, it might just be that the juice is worth the squeeze there. So,
probably. Larry Fitzgerald was one of the top target guys in the league last week. 13 targets, only 6 catches. He did drop a touchdown pass. He was sort of pushed out of the end zone on it. Not like that one place really matters. What you do like to see is it's another week of Larry Fitzgerald just being Carson Palmer's go-to guy. Do you see him as cash game viable again? I'm a little worried that Carson Palmer just kind of stinks, but I do like the fact that 13 targets against a bad defense, or going into a game against a bad defense, is kind of right where I want to be with cash games.
Oh yeah, Fitzgerald was a 70% start in cash games last week on FanDuel. He'll be right there again this week, if not higher. You know, everything that you were hoping from him on those, you know, obviously he didn't get in the end zone. He could have had a higher conversion rate. He has had, by the way, a much higher conversion rate historically. I think if you take all that together, you see that the price hasn't moved. Arguably better matchup against Indy here. Yeah, Fitz is going to, and no David Johnson, by the way, so Fitzgerald could theoretically eat up some of those short passes as well that Johnson is kind of known for. It's just a great spot, kind of a cash game must for me.
Right. David Johnson had something like 9 targets last week or something. Like, he
it's just such a good play.
I took the query off, so I'm off that page. But yeah, he had a ton of targets anyway. So like, there's just, when a guy like David Johnson leaves, that is a lot of stuff to go around to everybody else. And that is the thing that makes you feel kind of decent about a guy like Kerwin Williams. You know, yep. We saw this with Le'Veon Bell last year with D'Angelo Williams, where it was like, look, at some point, maybe you only need to play 2 downs because this guy touched the ball so many times that you're just going to you're going to touch the ball enough. Like, when you vacate, I don't know, 30 touches a game or something like that Johnson was getting out of an offense, that is a lot to go around, and it's a great spot against an absolutely horrid defense. Last 1 o'clock game is Buffalo and Carolina. Carolina pulled off the win last week, though they did struggle, I would say, just for them. Cam has another game that kind of is a carryover from what he was, his problems from the previous year, where he just has trouble. He's having trouble with just some of the accuracy, and then the completion percentage is
being kind of a quarterback. Big, in other words, he's having some difficulty being an NFL quarterback.
It sure seems like it, man. Yeah. I mean, like, this was another good matchup. I know San Francisco's under new coaching and whatever, but this is still, they're not the 85 Bears, you know, the 2000 Ravens. Like, this is not a good defense, and he just can't complete passes. Like, how worried are we about Cam at this point in terms of his fantasy viability going forward?
Oh, yeah, he was making it look real hard when we were watching that game last week, like, right, as Kelvin Benjamin players last week. It just looked like he was never going to get the ball into any receiver's hands in stride. Yeah, I'm pretty worried about Cam. I think that there's plenty of reason to believe that he's just a flash in the pan, that he's never going to return to actual good passing levels, whether it's, you know, a lack of ability or interest or tools around him, I'm not exactly sure, but nah, I don't have any interest in playing him against Buffalo here.
Christian McCaffrey did lead the team in total targets last week. Well, in carries plus targets, so like relative usage. But he had 13 running attempts and 7 targets out of the passing game. How do we like him going forward in terms of just – he's only 5,600 for him, for a guy who catches – remember, PPR, the PPR aspect of this really kind of helps boost him. If he's going to get targeted like this in the passing game and they're going to be willing to run him on the ground and he outsnapped Jonathan Stewart last week for week one, how much do we like him going forward? I feel like almost like we're buying a little low on him considering he didn't sort of meet the expectations of some of these other running rookie running backs like Cooks and Fournette, etc. I think he's almost not right there with him, but just a tick below for a lot less. What are your feelings on McCaffrey?
Yeah, I like him on DraftKings. I think the price is excellent. I think, to your point, the full PPR definitely plays a significant role. Listen, right now, McCaffrey is basically, you know, 1.5 to 2 down back, maybe. You know, he's going, I mean, just in terms of when he's actually going to touch the ball. So he's primarily out there for passing downs, it seems like. And then they were running him a bit as well. Wasn't super impressive on his actual carries. Like, you know, 3.6 runs yards per carry is pretty crappy. But, yeah, he's still very cheap on DraftKings. On FanDuel, I'm not a buyer. I think 6,600, you know, that's a price, almost an exact price I've mentioned several other times. Don't see the reason you need to take the risk there, but do think it's an appropriate gamble on DraftKings, just given, you know, some of the other guys you do want to play and spend up on. Getting 5 receptions or so out of the running back position is just great. So
outside of him, though, I'm not willing to target anyone in that passing game. Cam just needs to, I need to see, like, at this point, multiple games of good passing out of Cam to be able to safely feel okay about guys like Benjamin Olsen, any of these guys. I'm willing to live with it on McCaffrey right because well, the McCaffrey thing are typically low leverage passes, like i.e. screens. But really, anyone else where the ball needs to go more than 10 yards down the field, I'm totally fine taking a wait and see approach on this. And he's just going to need to put, again, multiple weeks of being able to put something together on the offense. And even then, I'm not totally sure I'm going to be able to buy in. Buffalo side, they, you know, with the coaching change this year in Buffalo and just, I don't know, really what their overall team plan is, they did run McCoy a lot. They played, you know, last year McCoy's issue was, you know, he would get spelled at times when it just kind of didn't seem to make any sense and he would get spelled at the goal line. But they ran him a ton and just used him a ton in this game. Do you see that as like sort of their plan going forward? And does he, if that's the case with him, if he's going to have this kind of usage on a week-to-week basis, and again, like coaching changes and stuff like that typically make me feel better about this kind of thing. So he had 22 carries and 6 targets. So if he's going to enter like that David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell type level of how much the team wants to use him, I mean, how much upside does he have? Does he actually slot himself in? Like, should he be $1,000 more expensive at this point if this is the kind of looks he's going to get?
No, I don't think he should be $1,000 more expensive. I think the goal line thing is a real issue. Of course, looking into week one is going to be a little bit misleading because he was really significantly banged up right before that Mike Tolbert touchdown. And he was getting some carries down in and around that area. Tolbert still did have 13 touches here in a game against the Jets. So, you know, they were spreading the ball around a little bit. I think McCoy's a great play. I mean, listen, he's not sneaking up on anyone. He was a 20% start in the million, for instance, on FanDuel. So it's not like people aren't playing the guy. I do think the lack of touchdowns and lack of touchdown opportunity are a concern for a guy that you're paying that much for. I still think he's very high floor, and that makes him a pretty good cash game play overall. I would caution people against streaming too high on the upside, though, because it's very tempting to look at a guy who gets 160 yards, 170 yards in a game and say, hey, this is a guy who's, you know, geez, he got unlucky. He could score more touchdowns. He might just not actually be unlucky. Looking into it more, the coaching staff was saying that Tolbert, it could just be the plan to play Tolbert in short yardage situations. And if that's the case, especially given McCoy's history of injury and how brutal those short yardage situations can be on your body, I think we could see him continuing to be deployed that way. So, you know, just temper your enthusiasm a little bit. Take the high floor. Understand that you're probably not getting quite as high a ceiling as you think.
I do think we see Charles Clay with some ownership. He had 9 targets last week, put in a pretty nice game. He's only 3,000 on DraftKings. You have to really like that in the PPR fashion, trying to get away from that position pretty cheap. So I do like Charles Clay, and I do think I'm not willing to say he's going to be the highest overall owned. He might be. Actually, I take that back.
He was what we were looking for last week, I'll tell you that much. Like, if we could have taken a guy, if we would have known he would have gotten 9 targets last week, we would have played him. So
we would have played by the flex with Ertz, honestly. Like, this is exactly what we're – I'm being serious. Like, this is what we were looking for. We were looking for some kind of 3,000 $100,000 guy. And if it meant going two tight ends, then that was going to be the case. We just couldn't really find that second tight end. Clay does fit that mold, and I take it back. I do think he's going to be the highest owned DraftKings cash game play, at least at a tight end at only $3,000. His points per dollar expectation is pretty damn high. Before we get to the 4 o'clock games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor doing a lot of free rolls this season. They had an NFL Survivor contest that you could enter. They do NFL free rolls every single week. And the great thing about Fantasy Factor continues to be, like, as much as the industry grows, there's still a great place for casual players to put in $5 to $50 a week against other players who aren't the super sharks. You know, these guys that are putting in 500 GPP lineups on DraftKings and FanDuel or whatever, they simply just don't head over to Fantasy Factor at this point. That might change in the future, but for right now, the getting is very good. So check out FantasyFactor.com and let them know we sent you.
All right, let's get into some 4 o'clock games. Finally, the NFL schedule is more than like three games. We have five going in the 4 o'clock in the 4 o'clock hour. So there will be something. You don't have to just kind of run bad on one game and then figure the rest of your Sunday is over. We'll start with Miami going against the Chargers. I'm still trying to get used to seeing that LAC moniker for them. Yeah, and just I want to say the Clippers. I'm like, man, they're playing the Clippers this week. Jeez, that's gonna be tough. I'm gonna say week five is when I get over the hump on that. Actually, no, never mind, because that week five is right around NBA starts, so I'm probably never going to get there on the LAC abbreviation for the Chargers. Miami did not play week one, so they kind of maybe fit that rust bill in terms of what they, you know, what we can expect from them. And they're also starting Jay Cutler, a quarterback, so who the hell knows with that team.
Yeah, you just don't know. That's the thing about Miami. You have actually no idea, and so you're not going to pay $8,000 for Jay, and you're not going to pay for anyone else, given that you have no clue, literal no clue what they're going to do with the ball. So that's a full skip for me.
Yep, I'm fully fine skipping them as well. On the Chargers side of the ball, we did talk a lot about Melvin Gordon yesterday and seeing him as a cash game play. I still stand by that very much so in terms of like what we could see, you know, just how they've been willing to use him in the offense. So go back and listen to that podcast for our thoughts on Melvin Gordon. Another guy that I'm wondering if we could target, especially maybe in some stacking situations this week, is Keenan Allen. So Keenan Allen basically sat out all of last season, played, I think, about a half of last to completely crush our hopes. I'll never forget that week one where we had him at pretty low owned, and he was absolutely destroying
everything. He had six catches on seven targets in like the second quarter, as I recall.
And no one played him, and we were like, yes. And then he just tore his ACL, and I just remembered that this is why football is football. Came out week one in a very difficult matchup against Denver, but he had 10 targets. Didn't do a ton with conversions, 5 for 35. But we've seen this in the past from him. Phillip Rivers wants to throw it to him as much as possible, right? He is a very, very good possession receiver when all things are clicking. How bullish, like how much did that buoy your feelings on Allen here? Like, did the 10 targets make you want to say, like, look, we can maybe take him up to where we had him at the beginning of season last year, which is to be close to a double-digit target guy per game? That matchup last week was not the best. Miami's a much better matchup. Where do we stand on Allen in terms of just safety and cash game or GPP considerations?
I really like Allen. I think he's a good play this week. He's, you know, maybe a little bit pricey compared to guys in his similar range, but we've seen him be a guy who could warrant an $8,000 price tag. Rivers is still a decent quarterback. Allen has had usage in the red zone. You know, some of the other bigger targets, Antonio Gates, whoever, not as relevant in that situation these days. So I think Allen, pretty much a very, very good high floor wide receiver play, especially on DraftKings, where the points per reception can really put it together for him too. So yeah, really like Allen here.
Allen's actually one of those guys, like, where if we look at in the same price range on DraftKings in terms of, you know, a guy, I'm just going to bring up a guy we talked about before, Alshon Jeffrey. They're $100 apart from each other, where Allen's 5,800.
Allen all day in that matchup.
Yeah, exactly. And this is one of these things where I'm like, now this is why it's always good to kind of break down and just like talk about each of these games individually, because it just gives you a look. It just helps you to see, like, okay, wait a second. We have Jeffrey for priced they're priced in the same range where we have Allen projected for a little bit less, and that strikes me as probably incorrect and something that I will go back and look at later on today and just say, you know, where are we with Allen and where are we with his targets? Because 10 feels like, this is crazy to say, but 10 feels like the floor for him just considering the matchup and what we've seen from him in the past. Denver's a very slow team, pace of play is likely to increase with just about every other matchup that the Chargers see this season. So getting 11, 12 targets out of Allen on a week-to-week basis can, to me, completely feels fine. Like I'm maybe, I don't know if it's going out on a limb to say that, but I could see him as being ending the season, if he can stay healthy, which is one of his biggest concerns, as being one of the biggest target guys, maybe just in the NFL this season. Let's move on. After that game, like I said, we have a couple other 4 o'clock games. Seattle takes on San Francisco. Seattle coming off the loss against the Packers at home. They struggled kind of in all phases of the game. But the San Francisco 49ers are a team where you can kind of bounce back and kind of put it all together. We talked a little bit about Russell Wilson yesterday. We did not talk about Doug Baldwin. Baldwin was not that targeted. I mean, really, just like the Seahawks just really couldn't get anything going against the Packers. Where do we stand with the rest of the Seahawks here in a matchup where they're 14-point favorites with a pretty high total, mostly because all the points are coming on their side, where you want to target the running game, but I'm just like not even sure you can, and I'm not even sure where you go with the rest of the team.
Yeah, I think Russell Wilson remains a pretty interesting option here. He's blown up San Francisco at times in the past. He's relatively cheap for a guy who can, in any given week, score the most total points out of the quarterback position if the legs get moving. And I think that, you know, we talked about him as a cash game viable play. That's very much the case in my mind. The running yards continue to be a big reason for that as well. I mean, he's running less now than he was earlier in his career, but the potential for it is still there. Is he as safe as guys like Rodgers or Brady for cash games? I'm not so sure about that. I know Vegas really likes them here, but you could see some kind of like running back by committee thing putting this together where, you know, Wilson, like we've seen a lot of games where the Seahawks were excellent, where Wilson had like 180 passing yards. So that's not great from the perspective of a premier quarterback. But yeah, he's a very, very good play. One way or the other, he'll probably get a lot of traction here. You don't touch the running game. The passing game has a lot of question marks. Maybe you play Jimmy Graham. He's kind of expensive too. But unfortunately, even for a team that's heavily favored, they're just not a team that's super stackable in the way, say, like Pittsburgh is, you know. So that's where I wind up kind of coming in on them.
Thomas Rawls should be back playing this week. It doesn't really matter for me, I don't think, because they
just just creates more confusion in the running back situation.
Yeah, they just have too many not mouths to feed, well, unless you're Eddie Lacy, but they
Doug, jeez,
I was too easy then. So I just don't know if I just don't really kind of want any part of that, and I'm just not really targeting anyone on the San Francisco side of the ball. I suppose Pierre Garçon could get some targets here in a game where they're playing catch up, but otherwise it's kind of a no thanks for me. Washington takes on the Rams. This game, let's start with Washington here. We had Terrell Pryor as a pretty high target guy going into the season last week. He did see some targets. He was another guy that had trouble with conversions. Where do we see him or any of these other Redskin guys in terms of cash games going against the Rams?
Yeah, I think Pryor's a great play. That's pretty much it. I think that we saw the Washington's plan is to try to get him the ball. He's interesting because he kind of brings, you know, DeSean Jackson's downfield threat with Pierre Garçon's usage in the short passing game as well, at least the way they were using him early on. I don't think he's as good downfield as DeSean Jackson, and I don't think he's as good at possession as Pierre Garçon. But if the opportunity is there, then I could see him turning into like a real wide receiver one. And right now you're paying $6,800, which is just simply too low. So I think Pryor just a phenomenal play really across the board until he gives me reason to think otherwise.
Yeah, the Rams are just a slow team, and that's the only problem with them, right? Like, they're just when these slow teams, it just kills some of your expected usage on the offensive side of the ball because that team just uses a lot of the clock. They run the ball a lot, and that's really just the only problem with the Rams. And I think that's the only thing that's kind of keeping the projection on Pryor down a little bit as compared to some of these other guys, because he was another guy that was then in that elite target range, 11 targets last game, among the highest in the league. My opinions on Pryor were very high going into the season, and what I saw of Week One, they are unchanged. They were getting him the ball downfield in just about in every situation. So I still love Pryor. I don't love him as much just because I don't think the matchup's as great this week, but I still very much like him this week and like very much like him going forward.
And real Rams, quick, before we move on to the next game, or before we go to the Rams thing, the Rams -3 in this game. I'm not a sports gambler by trade, but take Washington in the points if you bet that. I think that line looks like a dramatic overreaction to the Rams' excellent defensive performance in Week One. You cannot in any way expect for them to continue that when they're facing Kirk Cousins instead of Scott Tolson. So please don't get carried away based on the Rams' Week One defensive performance. I think it'll really do a disservice to what you're trying to do for both fantasy and any sports betting sort of things you want to do.
And the times of me ever recommending Todd Gurley again are over. Todd Gurley would need to finish the season with like 6 straight games, and then I'll maybe like think about recommending him for Week One next season. But I think that's kind of where I stand with Gurley now. Like, after that performance in Week One, that was the performance you needed to see something out of. It just didn't happen. I'm totally with you on the Redskins. I don't really tend to kind of favor. I mean, I do like pick 'em pools and stuff like that, but the Redskins are clearly for me with the points. I know they're going across the West Coast, and that's sometimes
they're basically saying that these two teams are even, and they're not. These are not two even teams. The Redskins are better, unless what you would need to be buying into basically is saying that everyone's taking this huge leap on the Rams, the defense, the quarterback, the running back, all that other stuff, and that Washington is taking a step back, and I just don't buy it. So anyway.
No, I'm completely with you. The last 4 o'clock game is Dallas and Denver. We talked at length about Ezekiel Elliott on the podcast yesterday and how we both see him as a possible cash game play this week, even against a Denver defense that's pretty stout. Elliott just is in that category of there's very few guys in the league that get the kind of usage he does, and he just sits almost at the top of the mountain in terms of how their team is going to use him, and I don't see that as changing at all from this game to all the rest of the games where he plays. They're going to run him and run him and run him, and that's just kind of their plan. Really, the rest of the Dallas side, I don't really see much interest in, just because Denver defense, again, is pretty good. And then Denver, I mean, they're still kind of the same team that stinks. I don't really know what to do with them. This is a game, all things being, we're pretty much avoiding this game for cash and tournaments, correct? Like, do you see any upside here?
Well, outside of Elliott, or you should mean this team.
Just both of them. Outside of Elliott, is there anyone else that you would even like think about
playing? Yeah, no, and Denver, it's too tough. I mean, they only passed the ball 28 times week one. That's just not going to sustain a receiving core that, you know, lends itself to spreading the ball around. Neither Thomas nor Sanders really did anything. Both of them are just too expensive based on their past. And from my perspective, like, Thomas would never be 7,000 if he didn't have those great seasons, you know, kind of kicking around from the old days, and the quarterback play isn't good enough. So you just move on. One guy I want to look at though is Jason Witten on the Dallas side of the ball. 7 catches and a touchdown last week, 74 snaps, 59 receiving yards, still very cheap. I think he will be in competition with Charles Clay for that kind of cheap tight end slot, just because we have the track record of him doing it in the past, and we have a track record of him doing it with Prescott. Obviously not a great matchup here with Denver, but not a guy you want to ignore completely if you're just kind of like fishing around for $5,000 tight ends the way so many of us are. But yeah, but the Denver side is a total stay away.
8:30 game is a game that I think I and anyone else that likes football is willing to tune in to watch, because it's the Packers and the Falcons. Over under on this game is 54, and unlike the Patriots game, it's actually projected to stay close, with the Falcons only at -3. We spent a lot of time on the combination of Rodgers, Montgomery, and Nelson yesterday, so if you want our thoughts on those guys, go back and listen to that podcast.
All great plays is what we said. Any format, feel free to deploy them and you'll feel good about it.
It felt fine just kind of saying you could play all three of them in cash and feel like your floor was pretty damn high on that. In tournaments as well, I rarely advocate that kind of situation with a quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and it does have diminishing returns at some point, though this is one of those situations where I think could get there. Falcon side, I'm wondering your thoughts here. So I've seen Julio Jones cropping up as a cash game play. Tons of upside, obviously. I don't think we ever need to make that case. But I'm seeing a lot of cases being made about Jones in terms of just like his viability and cash in a game where Atlanta, I believe, is supposed to put up the most implied points on the week. I've seen some stats thrown around like after Julio has a bad game, he has a good game, if you can follow him, like the logic nonsense on that. So I've seen that buoyed about or bandied about as a reason to play him. What are your thoughts on Matt Ryan, Julio Jones stack here? I don't think we need to like make the GPP case. That's clearly there. It's always there for these two guys. But in terms of cash, in terms of the amount of points they're supposed to put up this week, do you think that Atlanta suffers from having kind of too many weapons, or do you see these guys as a pair that you can kind of put together in cash and feel pretty good about it?
No, I think you can put them together in cash and feel pretty decent about it. I think, you know, you're still going to have some problems with the running backs cannibalizing one another there. But I think in terms of Ryan and Jones, you are getting plenty of safety. And I mean, Vegas loves this team to put up a ton of points. And while they've kind of turned their thumb their nose up at Vegas in the past and said, sure, you can give us as many points as we want and we'll score them, and you still won't know who's going to get them from a fantasy right perspective. Hi, Austin Hooper. See you out there, buddy. We almost played you last week, but took you out at the last minute. I think that, yeah, Ryan, just a terrific play, and Jones is going to continue to be what he is, which is a guy that you can absolutely play for big tournaments, and it's going to break your heart sometime in a cash games. So I think I like both of them. I don't know if I would want to lean on Jones for my cash games, just because I'm not going to be able to choose more than one expensive wide receiver, and I don't know who or why it would be Jones. One guy I do want to turn your attention to, though, is Mohamed Sanu. So Sanu is a guy our system was kind of looking at and going, huh, 4,800 week one? He wound up going out there, catching six balls for 47 yards. Nothing to write home about, obviously, but a 19% target share is a lot for a guy at 5,300 on FanDuel. Do you see him as warranting any ownership anywhere?
Yeah, he led the team in targets. I think you can make a case for it. He's clearly just strictly a possession guy. So you're not going to get, I doubt you're ever going to hit extreme upside on him. And I think the Falcons, more than most teams, play matchups in terms of defense, and where they, just because they have so many guys, right? And this is why you see a guy like Julio Jones only get five targets, because you just kind of don't need to, right? Like, if he's drawing double teams or not getting separation in that first read, then they just have other guys in the offense that they can throw to. Yeah, the nine targets were really great. It was kind of disappointing because we had him at times, but we just couldn't really pull the trigger just because it was
against. Well, he still wasn't that great either, right? I mean, he didn't really go off or anything.
On his price, he was pretty good for PPR.
I think we were looking at him on FanDuel, though.
Yeah, no, he's just unexciting. I don't think he's going to see enough of the red zone looks to ever really hit some great upside, and they really don't look to him downfield. The one other guy, and you mentioned Hooper. I know Hooper came off a game where he had 120 yards and a touchdown, but the guy converted two targets and just had one of the luckiest tight end runs you'll ever see, where he just stiff armed the safety.
Okay, one of the most badass tight end.
Oh, it was
runs
awesome. Don't get me wrong, it was awesome. But the times where Austin Hooper is going to stiff arm the safety and just have no one over the top at all, and he
put him on the ground like a young child,
and still able to outrun some of the D-backs through 80 yards in the field. That's the last time that's ever going to happen. I would caution people about going overboard with that Austin Hooper game. All right, final game on Monday night. Giants somehow favored here against the Lions. I guess they're favorite because Beckham's going to come back, but they're favorite at home against the Lions. Giants just could not have looked worse on Monday night against Dallas. I've seen jokes about Beckham should have just waited to come back from this injury and just asked for a new contract extension, because it was it's clear that you need me, because look what happens when I'm just not on the field. The wide receiver core looked horrible. Shepard, I know, got some targets. Brandon Marshall just looked completely lost in terms of he was a running joke on Twitter for the entire game. He just couldn't have looked worse. I don't think I'm targeting anyone here on the Giants, but the Lions are kind of interesting if you're playing this Monday night slate. Golden Tate had a decent amount of targets considering he was mostly shadowed by Patrick Patterson, and Stafford.
A great amount
good.
Of targets considering that.
Yeah, no. How do you feel about the Lions here?
No, I like Tate. I mean, I think Tate is just continues to be underrated and underpriced by and large. I mean, he's going up to 7,400 now. I think you can call him a wide receiver one, though. And I think, he had the same fantasy total is like LeSean McCoy. The guy had 10 catches for 107 yards, and he's got a track record like that in the past. So I think he continues to be underrated. We obviously saw Kenny Galladay come out and have the two touchdowns. I am not as bullish on Galladay as some. I think he will actually see some ownership across multiple formats this week, potentially unwarranted, just because, everyone, again, you love to dream on the young guy who comes out, scores touchdowns, he's a big player in college. But I just don't know that I personally see it for cash games out of Galladay, even given the seven targets. What are your thoughts on Galladay?
Nah, he doesn't play enough, I don't think. I mean, unless he was able to supplant Jones as just a clear wide receiver two, then I think I'd feel okay about it. But I just don't really see that happening. And one more thing about Tate. He probably does draw Janoris Jenkins this week. So, look, again, he was able to do work against Patrick Peterson. The only thing if you can avoid it, you want to avoid sticking wide receivers in against just elite cover corners.
Sure. Well, if you like avoiding Josh Norman, Jenkins was better than Norman last year by the people who track this sort of thing.
Right.
So I'm with you there for sure.
All right. That's it for us today. Game by game breakdown. Hope we covered everything you needed to know for DFS for week two. We're from dfsr.com/NFL. We'll get you that free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, MLB, NFL, NBA. All of it, and we all covered under one blanket that is for now $29.95, but at the end of this month that price is going up, so go and lock in your price now and you're all good to go, buddy. Enjoy week two of the NFL. I do not think we're podcasting tomorrow because we got this in a day early, so enjoy week two, and I will talk to you like I always talk to you, which is right after this podcast.
Can't wait.